Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Western Focus Podcast. I'm your host, Steven Meister. With me is my constant co-host, Cobalt. We're going to have an interesting episode now because obviously the LCS finals have completed. If you missed last week's episode, encourage you to go back and listen to it. But if you did not hear it, Team Liquid took down FlyQuest. They will be going along with FlyQuest to MSI to represent North America there. So obviously no games have happened in North America. We do have some news to update you on. There will be a little bit of LCS talk in here, but not as much as you might be used to, where we try to keep it a pretty even, somewhat close to a 50-50 split talking about both regions. There's going to be a lot more talk with the LEC as they are really ramping up now going into this final weekend of their playoffs. So we will be seeing which two teams will be going to MSI from the LEC. We know G2 will be going. It's just a matter of, are they going to be the first seed or will they be fighting in through the play-in? But there will be one more team joining them regardless that we currently don't know who it is. And that'll be the bulk of discussion for this episode. We will be starting off with the LCS just because there's not a ton to go through. But before we get into it, Cobalt, how's it going?
Every time you ask me and every time I am doing good. Busy life, busy stuff, but plenty of games, plenty of fun stuff to talk about, and we're right back at it. I'm ready to get started.
Peeling back the curtain here a little bit, we're recording a day later because I forgot to do my notes on Wednesday, but I got some nice detailed notes. These, I think these are the best notes that I've written for the podcast so far, so I'm going to set high expectations on this one. It should be really good, and I'm going to start into it right away with the LCS news. And fortunately for me, the only real news with the LCS outside of one little change that has happened for Dignitas, it's mostly Cloud9 news. So, Mythy and Cloud9 have parted ways. The head coach of C9 is no longer. And in a very, very quick, at the very least, reported hiring, it's not official yet, but Reaperd is reportedly going to be coming back to be the head coach for Cloud9. So, as I've mentioned before in my talks with C9, I could talk for a while, but like I said, I'm going to try to stick to my notes here. I'm happy that Mythy is gone. And even then, that is kind of harsh because, like, and obviously anyone losing their job sucks. But there needed to be changes made on this roster. And I don't disagree that coaching is a spot that needed to most likely get changed. So I'm happy that he's gone, but I'm underwhelmed with Reaperd coming back. I think that's probably the most accurate way I can put it. I was really just hoping for someone new, or at the very least new to the organization. If you don't know what Reaperd has been up to over this last period of time, when C9 let him go, he coached with 100 Thieves in the LCS for about a year. They had some okay results. They did not win under his tenure at the playoffs, but they had some decent performances. And then most recently in 2023, he spent a year in the LJL, the Japanese League, as the head coach of Sengoku Gaming. They ended up finishing first in the 2023 spring regular season, but lost to DFM in the playoff finals, so they finished second there. And then they did take a step back, actually, in the summer regular season, finishing only fifth, as well as third in the playoffs, not quite making it to that finals match. I obviously see the connection here, you know, bringing in a Korean coach to maybe help out Berserker. I don't know how much, you know, they're really caring about trying to keep Berserker happy because the whole roster was kind of a mess. They need to just kind of do what they think is best for everyone, not just one player in hopes of, you know, keeping your best guy around. But obviously, you know, the both of them being Korean helps, as well as going into this announcement, which I will work into here now, is that Fudge, the top laner for Cloud9, is reportedly going to be replaced by the former Damwon Kia Challengers top laner, Thanatos. So, again, Korean connection. Could just be, you know, wanting to maybe make Thanatos a little bit more comfortable coming in. Maybe there was some demand by, or not necessarily demand, you know, but some discussion with the team. If players have heard of Reaperd or if they liked Reaperd, they're fine with him coming back or whatever. Obviously, Jack and him were still on good terms. I wasn't sure how that was going to go because the downward trajectory that C9 was on with Reaperd kind of left you wondering, you know, if you know, would anything like that happen again where you would bring him back? I definitely never would have expected Reaper to come back. But especially with how quickly that signing was, I think the biggest thing that makes it kind of underwhelming to me is that it seems like just a little desperate. Like the report that when Mithy put out a tweet saying that he and Cloud9 parted ways, and then within like it had to have been like half an hour, maybe an hour at the most, Sheep Esports put out a report saying that Reaper's coming back and going to be the head coach. So it seems like that Jack really knew what he either really wanted Reaper, or it's just that there probably wasn't going to be a ton of other options out there, especially in the free agent coaching market. Reaper was not coaching in spring split of this year. So whether it's just going for the best free agent coach available, or Jack was like, you know what, I need to bring Reaper back. I really liked what Reaper was doing at some point in time, maybe, or something's going to rekindle here because, you know, we have good connections with Reaper before. Let's try to bring in something stable. Whatever it is, I'm not a huge fan of it, but at the very least, we do know Reaper has some sort of pedigree to him. Maybe with this little bit of time off in spring split of this year, maybe he's cooking up some new ideas, or you know, having a little bit of a moment of time to reflect on himself and maybe some things that went wrong, both with Sengoku and the LJL, but probably more so with his time in North America between C9 and 100 Thieves. I'm okay with it, but like I said before at the beginning, I was kind of just hoping for someone new, get a new face in here, some new ideas, because the issues, especially in the back end of Reaper's tenure here with C9, was still just like, you know, drafting and coming up with some more cohesive ideas. There were some drafts at Worlds I remember where people were just constantly flaming them for just being like, man, what is this guy doing? What is this team doing with the drafts and stuff? So I'm a little skeptical.
I think it's a fair point to raise that making changes like this is probably going to be a little suboptimal or perhaps a little rushed or whatever it may be, because in the mid-year, it's always going to be harder to make optimal changes than it is at the end of the year, obviously. Most rosters have their stuff locked down. Even the ones that are struggling are going to be intending to hold on to at least the majority of their pieces. So getting movement or finding someone willing to join you in the middle of this in the middle of the year is always going to be a little difficult. But if there's one thing I know, it's that you got to put faith in the Cloud9 systems. And I think that as much as, again, these might not be the optimal choices, they're making all the right choices in terms of where they're making their changes. So we talked about this plenty last episode, so I won't rag on it too much, but coaching staff was a good idea to make some kind of change. Obviously, you gotta bring the team together in a way that Mythy seemed not to be able to do. So whether it's Reaper or someone else, I don't really know what the right call would be, but the fact that they changed it is definitely good. And then top lane was probably the most glaring weakness on this roster, at least on an individual level. Of course, the cohesion was the main problem, but on an individual basis, Fudge was probably their weakest performing player by quite a significant margin. So making a change there makes a lot of sense. Thanatos, I've heard plenty of great things about coming up through those second tier leagues in the Korean circuit. So bringing in people like that, especially in the middle of the year, I think is a pretty good decision. And the fact that you were able to land them is also pretty good, especially considering it's halfway through the year. So I don't really mind it. I am not as intimately familiar with those two individuals, of course, as I would be someone in the European side of things. But I think that from what I've heard or seen in Reaper's case, they are probably above average in terms of pickup level. So I'm happy with this overall. Could it have been better? Probably, but with what they were working with, it's pretty good.
There's definitely the context of it being in the middle of the season. And I think that was the big thing for Reaper, probably, was that he is just a free agent. He wasn't on a team this year. So at the very least, there was that made it really easy to bring in a new coach. And there was something that I saw some people like saying, putting around on Twitter, just seemingly from a fan perspective too, is that like, you know, Reaper is kind of more of I guess like an authoritarian style is like what the words that I saw people using, like more of just like a guy who has strong opinions and he can kind of keep a team in line, whereas Mithy at the very least doesn't come off that way to me. He doesn't seem like super, you know, like strict or super demanding or whatever. But again, obviously we're not in the room. We don't know how that actually works. But Reaper could be the kind of guy to, you know, keep people in check and make sure there's a strong work ethic at the very least, and, you know, try to have everyone hunker down and respect him. Obviously in Korean culture it's a big thing, you know, for respecting your elders and, you know trying to work as hard as you can for them and all of that stuff. So I can see where that will work with Reaper coming in. As for Thanatos, who I didn't quite get to talk to about yet, it is exciting. I'm very much more excited about Thanatos coming in than Reaper, because as I said in the last episode, the changes that were needed on C9 were still the same. The drafting was still an issue. You still needed to look at support, and you still needed to look at top lane. I wasn't as harsh on Fudge last year, but after this split, I'm more fine with seeing him go, especially for bringing in Thanatos. He was popping off in the LCK Challengers League. That was 2 years ago, though. He ended up sitting out this last year, this most recent full split, because I don't know exactly for sure if it was like he thought he was too good or if the team thought he was too good, but regardless of the situation, like there was this idea that he's way too good for the Challengers League. He was really playing really super well 2 years ago, but Damwon was never going to promote him to the main roster in the LCK because they're going to be trying to win titles and they're buying as many good players as they can to try and bolster things around Showmaker. They don't want to risk too much on a rookie, especially when they brought up a rookie jungler this year. I believe his name is Lucid. I could be wrong on that. But they brought up their rookie jungler, who I believe was on the Challengers team for this year to play with them. So overall, I haven't watched too many games of him, if any, definitely that I can remember at this point. Maybe I saw a couple a few years ago when there was all that hype. The one thing that I saw on Twitter, I believe it was from, oh, what's his name? Cubby. I think it was from Cubby, who's the new co-host on Hotline League with Travis Gafford, is that he was talking about his champion pool, and that seemed kind of limited, so I looked it up on Oracle's Elixir, and when he did play in the 2023 season, and to some extent his career, it is kind of limited. In the 2023 season, he had 21 Gnar games, 19 on Renekton, 12 on Cassante, and then a huge drop-off to 5 games on Jace, and then 4 on Malphite and Ornn. And then over his career, he has 37 Gnar games, 35 Renekton games, 16 games on Gwen, so that's a new one that didn't get played as much in 2023, but then 12 on Cassante, Jace, Gragas, and then a little drop down to 10 and 9 on a few more champions. So, but the main bulk of his games are on Gnar, they're on Renekton. Kind of sounds like Summit, does it not? At least from the champion pool perspective. The one thing too that I also heard is that supposedly like his lane phase actually like was not like his strongest ability, unlike Summit, where Summit was more known of being like a super dominant laner but getting caught out all the time. It seemed like, I believe it was from Cubby as well, that more so of a team fight player was Thanatos than the lane phase being a super dominant threat in there. But again, this is not like a first-hand view of like me watching these games. I'm very excited to watch some games of him and get diving into that, as we'll look more towards the summer split starting off for the LCS. We'll have, you know, our preview show for that kind of stuff, and that's where I'll be digging into him more and giving you more information there. But at the very least, he is an exciting player coming in, and I am much more looking forward to him being in the top lane than I am for Reaper being in the coaching position.
The one thing that I'm going to add here is, if the theory holds true that every good roster requires either a rookie or a sophomore, Thanatos being a rookie definitely helps with that formula. We're going to break apart this whole super team narrative. We're going to bring in someone fresh, someone more willing to adapt, especially given that he's been off for a little while. He's going to be wanting to get himself warmed up. He's going to be willing to listen to coaching, listen to the way that his team plays. And I think that it'll be a good fit on that angle, as well as the fact that, of course, he brings in some raw talent. So very happy with this change as well. And I'm just hoping, to be honest with you, that Cloud9 figures it out and starts playing like the Cloud9 we have come to pretty much expect. I think that not having them at an international tournament here at MSI is a disservice, and want to see them at Worlds. Let's hope that happens.
Yeah, at this point, the LCS is better when Cloud9 is good, and that's a huge like credit to Cloud9, because obviously saying that as a C9 fan, you're gonna scream like, you know, I'm biased, and to some extent, yeah, sure I am, but I try to limit it as much as I possibly can. But with just how good C9 has consistently been since they've been in the league, when C9 is good, the LCS is better, because they have had some really dominant teams, even going back to that first iteration of the Balls, Meteos, Hi, Sneaky, and Lemon when they first came onto the scene. That team was crazy, and then they slumped a little bit with Jensen, but then Jensen got going, and even through all these changes, it's like no matter what they did, basically they always made it to Worlds, except for 1 year they missed out on Worlds. So it's always important to have C9 being good, and I'm hoping that they can finally get it going again for summer, because the worst case scenario, I didn't even think it was going to be this bad, but it ended up happening in Spring Split for them. The other piece of LCS news that has come through is that Dignitas has fired their head coach, Enatron. They are the third team to fire their head coach, along with C9 and Immortals, who let go of their head coach, Sharks, a little while ago. I was quite surprised that Dig let Enatron go, that they fired him, because Dig made the playoffs this split. And I don't think anyone was expecting Dig to make the playoffs this split. So they clearly either must have had a lot higher expectations than just making the playoffs, or there was something else going on, which it doesn't seem like there was. Otherwise, I feel like it would have come out with a report, you know, as to saying why he would have been fired. So I thought this was a great split for Dig, you know, going into the playoffs, just, and even though they didn't really get to advance that far, just the fact that they made it with that roster that they had, with like Tomo and Isles and Dove being the mid lane, like he was good, but going into the season, you weren't really expecting a ton out of Dove. They kept Rich, and it's like Rich is not that great. And I was super skeptical about XU coming up, because he said he had a little bit of time in the LCS and he was bad. So the fact that they even made the playoffs, I thought was a huge accomplishment for them. And I was really looking forward to seeing if they could, you know, continue to build off of what they had going on. And to some extent, at the very least, they might. We haven't heard any roster changes for them. I would still be fine with them making changes in multiple positions, but at the very least for now, it's still obviously very early for the LCS. No other roster moves have been even close to being rumored around by any other LCS team other than the ones that C9 has made. So we'll see if Dignitas ends up making any sort of player changes, as well as the coaching change with Enatron. But I guess we'll look to see who they bring on. I mean, Mithy's available. I don't think he would want to go to Dignitas, but hey, he's a free agent. You know, go get him. Why not?
Not a whole lot to say here. I think that you pretty much covered it as about as good as you could. That, yeah, Dig did better than anyone would have thought. I had them 8th in my power rankings, and if I'm not mistaken, you had them 7th. So the fact that they came 6th is in itself an accomplishment. And if Dig had higher aspirations than that, they sure weren't showing it with how they built their roster. So let's be honest here, Dig. You outmatched what you were supposed to do. If you want to do better, you're going to have to make some changes on the Rift, not just off.
Well, and I mean, like, it's not even like that, like, the 6th was like a bad 6th place. Like, they had some pretty good games. Like, it wasn't like they just barely snuck in there at 6th. They were a decent team, had some really nice wins throughout the regular season. So, you know, yeah, they only got in there with that last spot, but they put up a good fight in a lot of those games that they had. So I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm surprised that they let him go. We'll have to see what happens for them moving forward. I'm gonna leave it at that, but I'm not optimistic. If you're changing the head coach after a season where you actually made playoffs and no one thought you would, basically, I'm skeptical about that too. So that is all of the news for the LCS. Like I said, obviously a bit of a shorter segment. I tried to drag it out as long as I could with the C9 stuff, but there is a lot of series going on in the LEC, along with one piece of roster news that has broken in regards to Giant X, but I am not going to break that for you. I will let Cobalt do that. So Cobalt, take it away.
Yeah, so like Steve is alluding to, this is a rumor, or at least a sources tweet from Sheep Esports that we don't have official confirmation, but it's most likely going to happen, is that Odoamne in the top lane has been benched for Giant X. Still no news on who the replacement would be as of yet. And then there's also less confirmed, but they're saying that there's talks about it, at least, that they might be benching Peach in the jungle as well. Now, if we rewind to our conversation last week, I think that these changes make a whole lot of sense for them. I'd be a lot faster in getting rid of Peach myself. I think that if they're only talking about it, they need to talk faster and just make it happen. And then Oduamne in the top lane, while I don't think was the problem on the roster, he of course is not the Oduamne that we've come to expect from the past. He's just been kind of okay, had good moments, but otherwise was pretty average, especially considering how seemingly buffed the top lane in general got with talent this year. So I'm okay with these changes, especially if they confirm the Peach one. And then in terms of who they bring in top lane, I have really no idea. I know that Alfari's still gone, but he's been kind of just acting as a semi-positional coach for Broken Blade over on G2. And then we have Shigenda, who's been a free agent because of course, him being dropped from Rogue / Koi of last year. Or he was still in winter, but they dropped him in winter. So you could pick him up, I guess. Otherwise, I'm not really sure who you would go to. And then in the jungle, I was talking about this a little bit before we started recording, is that I think unironically importing Spica over from North America would make a whole lot of sense for me. I think that it's pretty criminal he doesn't have a roster, and then closer as well as an option, and he would be a little bit more likely just because he does come from Europe. So either of those two changes I'd be happy with. We don't have anybody currently sitting notably on the European McDonald's roster. So it's, for me, it's got to be either from the ERLs you're bringing someone up or look somewhere else in the world. And those two choices seem pretty rational to me.
I'm fine with the changes too, the rumor changes. Like I agree with the sentiment around Peach. I think definitely should be looking to bench him and find a replacement along with Oduamne. You had some good references with like Shigenda and Alfari, obviously. There's more NA guys like you can look at too, but for them it's more so a matter of like would they go to Europe, and I would say the answer is probably not. But if you're looking at like a quick like top list of free agents for top lane, Fudge obviously is rumored to be available now. We'll see if he gets like released fully or if he's still going to be like under Cloud9 under contract but just not playing. Someday is a free agent. Licorice is obviously still a free agent from Golden Guardians last year. And then as you mentioned, the jungle, there's Closer and Spica available as the two big names there. So not just for Giant X, but K-Corp as well. I snuck them in here. They're obviously rumored to be making roster changes. They were reportedly in on Thanatos, but that did not end up going through. So that would have been kind of interesting. I'm not surprised he didn't want to go there. But obviously, I think going to C9 has its own benefits as well with like Berserker and Reaper. And I think NA's been... Maybe that's not right to say, but I think NA's been obviously more import-friendly for Koreans and overseas people going to NA. They more so go to NA than Europe, at least right away. But yeah, so I'm fine with, you know, Oduamne being gone, Peach being gone too. But I know you were kind of mentioning it too, like there's still more to be done there. And we've talked about, I believe it was in the last episode where Giant X got eliminated, we were talking about them a little bit. Like, Patrick, he's fine, but you can still look for an AD carry replacement. Zven has been streaming now on Twitch, and he's been playing AD carries. I don't think he's looking to make a return in support anytime soon. So Zven would be a likely AD carry free agent, at least. There's Unforgiven. Abadage is a free agent. I don't think they'd be getting rid of Jackies, at least for a GX. He seems to be doing okay, but Abadaga's available. But that's, like, the last really, like, big name out there. There's not a huge list of, like, established guys, so it would have to be more so of either one of those names, Abadaga, Zven, maybe Closer, as you mentioned, being more European. He's, like, Turkish, I believe, so he has a little bit more of a likelihood to go back to Europe, and then you're getting to those NA guys of Spica, Fudge, Licorice, who probably I wouldn't expect to go over to Europe, so then you would have to start looking into the ERLs, which I would be kind of open for GX, because they seemingly, at the very least, they did an okay job with Jackies. He hasn't been, you know, super great, but he's been surprisingly fine. So if you trusted your scouting to get a guy out of the Croatian league, like, you know, trust your scouting again, look for other players, whether it's on your team or on other teams, see if you can buy him out, get him on your team for cheap. I assume they're going to have to be looking for kind of those budget plays. So I would be for GX, especially looking into the ERLs and such to replace those guys.
I wouldn't mind them kind of taking on that role of being a development roster, if you will. Obviously, we saw Madlands Coy go pretty ham on that angle, but considering GX doesn't really have much of an identity, if I'm being honest, and they're a new brand, doing something like focusing on the ERLs, especially with given the track record with Jackies from a Tier 3 league, would not be a bad angle to take at all.
Yeah, I mean they flopped with flopped might be a little harsh, but they didn't do good with, you know, Odoamne, Patrick, and Ignar. All those guys have been around for years and years already, and you know it doesn't seem like you'd be making any sort of big bold move up the standings by just changing out your top and jungle when you still have Patrick and Ignar down there. Ignar's fine. He's maybe a little bit better in terms of individual rankings and stuff in the league than like where Patrick is compared to the ADCs. But yeah, just find some young guys. Trust your scouting. If you think you really liked what you did with Jackies, obviously Peach is kind of like a negative on that resume too. But take your chances. Yeah, there's no shame in being a development roster, especially in a franchise league. That's what people wanted. Like for North America, especially, it was like that was like the pitch for all the franchise teams. Like, okay, well now that we don't have to worry about getting relegated anymore, we'll promote NA talent because, you know, we don't have to worry about, you know, losing our spot and losing money and all that stuff. But obviously that didn't happen. That's what you should be doing, and a team like GX seems to be in a great position to do it, so I would definitely encourage them to keep going.
And considering that we don't have too much more going on, besides, of course, that K Corp rumoring changes, we just don't know who's being replaced, who is coming in potentially. We're going to move right along into our usual first segment, which is the send-offs for the teams that have been eliminated. And we're kind of going to go in order in terms of when they were eliminated. And first on the chopping block was Team Heretics. So they were the first to go out with a 2-1 loss over to Fnatic in the Saturday series, the first of those BO3s. Last week, I said that if Heretics arrives at peak form, they would beat Fnatic, but based on trajectory, Fnatic looked better. And that's kind of the way that things played out, if you will. That with game one, we saw that Heretics were really showing up. They made Fnatic scurry around like rats, with the way that they were playing the macro game around the map. Every time Fnatic was making some kind of play or pursuing something, we had Heretics right across the map doing something else. So, like, if Fnatic commits to a Drake, Heretics takes top and a couple mid turrets. Or Zvyru and Wunder catch humanoid bot, and Fnatic start moving down. Team Heretics TPs to Baron while Wunder casually gets away, and then they win that play as well. So, game one was favorable, at least for Heretics.
Fnatic's just allergic to game ones, I guess. Like I don't know. They just hate the number one or something. Maybe that's why they can't win the LEC anymore. They hate number one. They don't want to be one. They want to be two. I figured it
That does
out.
seem to be the trend. That's
Oh
all
my
they're doing.
goodness! I can't believe it. Wow, I'm so smart.
Right off the dome. And I'm proud of you, Steve. You got the narratives going on. Let's go. But unfortunately, at least on the Heretics side, Fnatic, of course, is happier about this. As soon as game one was wrapped up, Fnatic kind of shook the dust off their shoulders, said, okay, we got the game one off. That number one curse is gone. We can start focusing now. And the series very much started pivoting in their favor, and of course, ended up being a win for them. And I think that game two, at the very least, we can still call close. I think that right up until about 25 minutes, the game was pretty much dead even. The gold was, of course, swinging back and forth, but it was pretty much within 1,000, if not less. At that 25-minute mark, roughly, Fnatic decide to take a Baron, and they do secure the objective because Heretics was a bit late on collapsing on them. But then Heretics, as Fnatic is trying to escape, kills off three of their members, and it's just Humanoid and Noah that manage to get away. At this point, it's looking pretty good. Heretics, of course, denied majority of the Baron buffs. They could have reset and tried to figure it out. But unfortunately for them, they did decide to really commit for the fight. They decided that they want to get rid of all the barons if possible. And considering that Noah was able to reach his turret in time, they decided to turn their attention to Humanoid, who unfortunately wasn't quite as fast. And once they used all their CC, they of course locked down Humanoid and were able to get that kill. Noah decides, for the first time ever, it seems like, he's gonna go in. Normally, we see this guy as a KDA player, but this time he decides he needs to be the carry. He listened seemingly to what people were saying about him, and he's gonna prove everyone wrong. He jumps in over the wall, picks up a solo pretty much quadra kill, and then the game is just completely screwed for Heretics from there. Had they backed off, like I mentioned, who knows how that game would have panned out. Had they, I don't know, played that a little smarter or dove Noah immediately, recognizing that the majority of the gold was on him, take that risk and see where that takes you. Instead, they decided to go for the humanoid play, and of course, that unlocked Noah's potential to turn it around. And then game three was just unfortunately for Heretics, Fnatic always securing more, much like we saw the flip side in game one. And in the end, when we saw the last team fight play out, Heretics just didn't really look like they stood a chance. So overall, the trajectory here was a pretty unfortunate end from Heretics in the sum of things. I think that it's pretty good that they improved over winter. They went from 7th, 8th to 5th, 6th, and the roster changes do definitely look positive. Of course, Perks was one of the glaring weaknesses. Zvyru has come up as a pretty valuable replacement there, and then Trimby, of course, continues to be Trimby and just brings value wherever he goes. So I am hoping that as much as Heretics could have shot for more, that they do run this roster back for the summer, don't really mess with things too much here anymore, allow them to grow a little more as that team, considering they didn't have winter together, and then hopefully they don't fall off in playoffs as hard as they did the past two times. I want to see that trajectory of the good regular season transition them into the playoffs next time.
Yeah, this was definitely a great split, a great improvement for Heretics. I felt really bad for Zvyru because he was like their only hope in all of these games. And the first game obviously was a good win for TH. That was the first one that they won. Zvyru went 9-1-3 on the Ahri in that game. He had a lot of really nice plays and some really good fights. But in those second games, in the second and third games, it really was just kind of. He was really the only real threat for Heretics in those games. In the second game, he was playing Azir. He was 7-2-5 in that game, but Flacket on the Jinx was just a little bit too far behind, wasn't quite ready to be in position to help out with the team fights in that one. And then the third game was definitely a lot worse for Heretics overall. There were a couple of funny plays throughout this series, but I think the best one was in this third game where Fnatic ended up engaging on Heretics in the mid lane. Oscar, who was playing Zac this game, slingshots in. Zvyru on the Azir ults him back. But Trimby, who was playing Alistar in this game, also decided that, oh, I see, the Zac coming in. I'm going to headbutt him away, try to headbutt him in midair. So there's this weird interaction where the Azir ult kind of knocks him back, and then based off of where Trimby is positioned, the headbutt from the Alistar actually headbutts Oscar back into the middle of Team Heretic. So Oscar gets a free four-man ultimate right in the heart of Team Heretics, then Razork flashes in, Flacket dies to Noah's Jinx ultimate, and then Fnatic runs them down, and then at the end of the game mid off of that play off of a very abrupt and botched little interaction there from Zvyru and Trimby there. But it was a great series from Fnatic. Like I said, sucks for Zvyru. Couldn't quite have those same big moments on the Azir as the Ahri in that first game. Didn't quite have the same amount of support, but it was a much better split for Heretics. They still have work to do. It is a solid roster, though, with the upgrades of Trimby, of Zvyru, and just seeing that kind of level of play that we were hoping to see from Perks and those guys beforehand. But if you got to make changes to get there, you make the changes to get there. It was nice from Fnatic. Noah really got them through that second game, as well with a great early game from Razork in the third game. They ended up fighting very well together. They played really good as a team. Strong stuff from them. We'll see TH coming back hopefully just as strong in the summer split with, I would hope, this roster. I wouldn't expect probably any more changes at this point. I think you got a good group here. Let them take the time, play another split together, see what happens.
Then the other team that was eliminated on that second Sunday BO3 was between Mad Lions and Vitality. And this series, all I can really say is that it delivered. We were expecting a lot of skirmishing, a lot of heavy-handed fighting, considering the trajectory that both of these rosters have been on. And that's exactly what we got. And unfortunately for Mad Lions, Koi, their stumble from winter form became a free fall in this series. Vitality took, like I was expecting, and I think you were as well, Steve, a very convincing 2-0 victory. And that was, unfortunately, the end of the line for Mad Lions Koi, being, of course, the biggest deviation from the winter split script, if you will, where Mad Lions were unfortunately unable to secure that top four finish they had before. Now, looking at the games individually, game one was as LPL as it really gets. There's no objectives up multiple times throughout that game, and for seemingly no reason, we have 4v4s and 5v5s sprouting out of nowhere. And generally speaking, as these fights were playing out, of course, over objectives or not over objectives, like maybe there's just a random red buff, Mad Lions Koi was generally pulling ahead. It was pretty good looks from them, at least in the beginning. And if memory serves me, I think they did develop a little bit of a gold lead, despite how close it was. But it's just when those final two or three fights were coming around that Vitality suddenly became increasingly more favored. And then in the very final fight, it was just a clean ace for nothing in exchange. So Vitality very much turned it around. They proved to be the superior team fighting team and the superior skirmishing team. And then game two was also pretty skirmish heavy, but the patterns were a little bit different. Where while Mad Lions Koi were pulling ahead in the first game, they seemed to be putting themselves behind in the second one. They were the ones initiating pretty much every fight. We would see that Elioya would roam into the enemy jungle with either Friskawi or whoever it is that's around him to kind of support. Tries to do something aggressive, as this team usually does. And every single time, that kind of early move allowed for Mad Lions Koi to take advantage of the early numbers advantage. And then that nets them either a kill, builds them some space to kind of progress in the fight or whatever it is. At first, it will look good. But then Vitality, pretty much every single time, would bring in their players a little bit delayed, and then they would win out harder in the end just because they were playing those fights a little bit better, once those number advantages disappeared, of course. And a lot of the patterns I was getting, or a lot of the vibes I was getting, is that Mad Lions Koi kind of had a need-to-get-something-right-now sort of mentality.
Yeah, they were just over-forcing way too hard. And that second game especially, like, they had like three plays at the very least where it's just like, man, like, I can kind of see what you're doing, but you're doing it just way too hard, way too fast, and they're not accounting for the follow-up, like you were saying, with Vitality being able to respond and then end up being in a better position to take the fights in the end.
Exactly. It's kind of like a desperation, if you will, where I agree that sometimes the angles might have looked good, but then either Vitality flashes out, or maybe the angle isn't quite as good as they might have thought going into it. Normally, the thing you would do is back off, of course. But Mad Lions seem to really commit every single time, even if the angle looked bad. And then that, of course, just ends up feeding into the pockets of Vitality. They take advantage, close it out a lot more cleaner than the first game. And that just kind of puts an end to Mad Lions' entire split, unfortunately. So this probably would be a lot more in line with where we would have expected, kind of this fresh sort of roster. Of course, a lot of people had them down in 10th in their power rankings, but that was more a function of we don't know who any of these people are. That's as best as we can guess, is that they're going to struggle in the beginning, at least. Once you get a feel for them, maybe you'll place them higher up. So 5th, 6th finish isn't really bad, especially given what their regular season looked like. I think they did step up at least a little bit. But it is an indication that the LEC as a whole has kind of figured out how to adapt to this skirmish-heavy, chaos-ridden, aggressive sort of play style that Mad Lions have adapted. And as they figure it out, they know how to deal with it, where they either dodge the fight entirely or they'll be able to punish them with kind of more resources or whatever it is. So going into the summer split, of course, no anticipated changes for this roster. I think it's really important they keep this style. It seems to be something they like playing, and it fits them for the most part, at least given how winter went. It's just they need to polish a little more on how they execute. You don't want to look kind of this desperate team that we saw here in this final series for them. You want to temper that aggression a little bit, be better about identifying whether it's about to work or maybe the angle isn't as good and you need to back off and try again later. If they can do that, temper it, be a little smarter with it, then of course we saw them do well. I don't see a reason why they couldn't do it again.
The execution is definitely the big thing, especially for having the best AD carry in the LEC. I think they got to be doing better with playing some of those team fights and stuff like that.
That was crazy. He is crazy for that one, Supa.
But like you literally stole my notes, like bar for like my summary, you basically stole it bar for bar. I have MDK kind of got figured out and they didn't seem to have some of the same execution around the map and their aggressive plays like they did in winter, but if we take their expectations going into the season, I feel like some would still be impressed to see them lasting this long in the playoffs in spring, but they do need to be a little bit more careful.
Hey man, great minds think alike. That's why we've been doing this podcast together.
Well yeah, and to be fair, it's not like they're that hard of a team to figure out, because it is a very linear and aggressive play style. They're very consistent in how they do it, and I do respect it, because this is what we expected of them coming in winter split. It just so happened that they played it better in winter split, I would say for sure, than they did in spring. But there is also again that fact of just, oh okay, like we kind of know what we're expecting now. We're not going to be taking these guys lightly anymore, like I'm sure some of those teams were doing in winter. So you stole my summary pretty well, and yeah, I mean the games overall, they definitely were Vitality favored. I do think that the first game with some of those fights, a lot of it was just like some picks, like Frescawi was getting caught in the side lane a couple of times, and then in the end in that final fight he ended up being caught mid lane by Photon, ulting in on the TF with the gold card, as well as Daglus joining with him there. And then by the time that both teams got there, it was already, you know, Vitality was in a better position to be able to take the fight at that point. And it was a great game from both Vito and Karzy in that one for Vitality. And then the second game, as I mentioned, I interrupted you on there, it was just the over-aggression from Mad Lions in about two or three of those plays. It's just like maybe I can kind of see what you're looking for there, but it's probably not the correct decision. And then especially for how hard they ended up committing into those plays. The first one they did, it only ended up going 2-for-1 for Vitality, which wasn't too bad, but the second one ended up going as a 4-for-2 in favor of Vitality. And once you're giving Vitality such a snowbally team as well, with how snowbally MDK is going to be, any sort of lead can really just balloon a game with these two teams, and it's super hard. And it ended up going Vitality's ways in both of those games. It was a great series, though, in terms of just like being entertained by it. You know, a lot of fighting, obviously, was not surprising with all the action. Photon, Vito, Karzy played really well in all two of those games. So we'll be seeing more of Vitality here in this upcoming series that we're going to be talking about. And then, yeah, for MDK, you know, obviously great stuff to even make it this far with the expectations coming in. We'll see how they run it back going into summer, and if they can maybe kind of iron out some of those inconsistencies and the over-aggression that they have.
And speaking of a banger series that was fun to watch, what better way to talk about than to pivot into the, of course, we're going to kind of skip in the timeline at least, but we're going to switch right over to the Vitality versus Fnatic series, which if you thought that Mad Lions Koi versus Vitality would be scrappy, then boy, was this a series. Because not only did game one match the record for the most kills in a single game, game two surpassed the record for most games in a single game, or most kills in a single game. And then by the end of game four, when the series was all wrapped up, this series has locked the record for the most kills in a single series in LEC all time, which is no real thing to scoff at. This was extremely bloody, plenty of fights going on, plenty of people dying all the time. Every single fight was pretty much like a 3 for 4 or a 4 for 4 or whatever it might have been. And it was just, say what you will about the quality, of course. A lot of people like to talk about how things are flippy and everyone's bad, but it was fun to watch. You gotta give it that. The only outlier really was, in terms of the way that things were playing out, was that game one, kind of similar to how we went with the first series, is that Vitality were coming into this game looking better. Their fights were pretty well executed, and as much as Fnatic were able to maybe blow up a single target, they never really were able to secure any of those fights in the broader scheme of things. If they got Karzi, Vito popped off. If they got Vito, Karzi popped off. And then just in case they needed a little bit more push, Photon was there as well on that Jace pick to do that extra bit of damage and win Vitality those fights. So every single time, Vitality seemed better. And at that point, I thought that, say what you will about predicting off one game, maybe I was a little premature with that. I thought that Vitality would take the series just because of how that game looked. They were very systematically beating Fnatic, it seemed like, playing better overall, both with the map and with the fights. But then, of course, it all really went downhill.
Yeah, you're overlooking the Fnatic game one effect there, unfortunately.
There it is. It's like the narrative is, it's just gotta be true. Fnatic doesn't like number one. So you've heard it here, folks. Fnatic cannot win this split. It is physically impossible. But I think I'm gonna probably write off the way that particular game turned out just because of how Fnatic drafted. I think that the draft was not really what they were looking for. Of course, they took a chance on that Diana pick, which it's exciting. Diana is very much a go in and do big flashy things type of champion. But it felt like in this game, Humanoid wasn't really able to find good ult angles. Kind of like I mentioned, it was a lot about finding a single target. That seemed to be what his ults were used on, if you will.
I would want to bet you so badly that Humanoid probably didn't play a single game of Diana in like the past like 5 years up until like probably the past couple of days, where he probably saw one in like China or Korea play it, and then he tried to put in like as many games as possible on he could, and then no surprise, he went like 2-10.
Yeah, very much left plenty to be desired. And then the other call out I have to give is that as much as I like picking Kalista, it's a pretty good aggressive type of champion. We saw Noah build Lethality for some reason on her, which in this game just did not seem like the right call given how rarely he was able to get on the backline. Of course, as Fnatic locked down a single target, he was able to hit them, but then he was stuck hitting a Malphite all fight, which when you're building Lethality in the late game is not going to do you very much. And his damage numbers just weren't really good that game.
He was either hitting a Malphite or, better, he was hitting a Volibear. So two just beautiful targets for Lethality Kalista right there.
Yeah, it's just a draft gap. That's all really game one probably was. Of course, credit to Vitality for pulling that off, but the draft just did not set up Fnatic for success. And then they kind of learned from that and ventured more into what you would have expected from a Fnatic draft in the following three games, and of course, they were able to take all three of those. And the kind of trajectory that I see for this series is that as much as I saw Fnatic as a very exploitable team where Razorak is the guy for them, we saw Noah kind of rise up a little bit in that first series Fnatic played, but overall, it kind of relies on that jungle pop off. And I thought that Daglas would be able to match him at least enough to kind of slow that down and then allow Vitality to pull off better stuff in the later game. But he just didn't seem all that much up to the task, unfortunately, in this series. He wasn't coming in nearly as much as he seemed to in the past for this split Vitality. And then, of course, as Razorak got ahead, the rest of Fnatic is really good at also getting themselves ahead. And then kind of snowballing that to the victory. So every single one of those three games, Vitality were putting up a fight. Of course, we saw it in just the amount of deaths that were going on. But every single fight, it just felt like Fnatic were at least that little bit better. And then snowballs, gets them the win. I think that the only thing I will give them is I can finally acknowledge, I have to, that Vitality are not the frauds I believe them to be. They perform pretty well this split overall, and locking top four, of course, is an accomplishment if nothing else. Who knows what they'll do next split? Maybe they'll do even better.
The big thing for this series was for me was that it really was just kind of, you know, it was Karzy and there wasn't a lot of help there other than in that first game where it was a convincing win for them. The VTO and Photon, and as you mentioned, Daglis, like there just wasn't enough there. And I think to some extent, Fnatic really did get carried by Noah in some of the games, especially in that second game where it was like 50 plus kills in a 30-minute game. There was some great plays made, but Noah really popped off in that game. He went 17-5-3 on the Xayah in that game. The third game was a complete stomp for Fnatic's favor. Humanoid went 11-1-12 on Ahri, and then Noah was 11-1-10 on Varus. The final game was kind of interesting because of how long and how drawn out of a banger it kind of was. That was not a super great game for either Noah or Humanoid for Fnatic's point of view, but Oscar Rinnan actually had a really nice Zac game in that one. So for Fnatic, it was kind of nice just to see, you know, it was a little bit of everyone to some extent, and I think that's good because you do, especially when you're going against G2, you are going to need kind of that little bit of everyone contributing and having their own game to take over and really compete. As for Vitality, it really was just kind of Karzy being the only real consistent performer, and that was what really did let them down. He was by far their best player other than that first game. VTO wasn't up to it, Photon wasn't up to it, Daglis wasn't up to it, Hildy was trying to int for a tower plate on Tahm Kench in one of those games. That's how desperate they were to find any sort of advantage they could against Fnatic. But yeah, overall, I'm happy with Vitality because I really do like some of those players, like Karzy especially. Just he is obviously a very fun player. Hilly, for his ups and downs, is entertaining, even though he's probably not, you know, the top tier echelon of support anymore. And the rise of Photon has been really pleasing to me. Definitely worth being the one guy to stick around from that failed roster from before, as I'm sure I've mentioned before in talking about Vitality. So definitely looking forward just to the run back. That's what I would expect. Maybe if they are, and if they do end up on like the kind of high end of their outcomes with, you know, some consistent improvement from Daglis, some maybe even more improvement from Photon, and if you can get some more ironed out consistency from VTO and Hilly, I think there is a world where they can be kind of up there and contending, but You're kind of asking for a lot for consistency out of VTO, Karzy, and Hilly, and you're still hoping that Daglis will improve. And, you know, again, even to some extent, Photon, you're still hoping to see, okay, you had a really nice split here, but now you got to do it again. And then hopefully we're all still going to be able to have our other main carries perform with you too. And that's going to be the thing that's going to hold this team back, is those high highs, is those really low lows. As much as I would like to see, you know, maybe like a change somewhere to maybe bring in someone a bit more stable, I just don't know where you would do it at, because, like, again, as we talked about with the free agency before, like, the only real, like, decent free agent mid for Europe especially is Abadage. And I mean, like, Abadage is, like, fine, like, he's good, and he is a bit more of a consistent player, I would say, to some extent than VTO, but I probably would just rather keep VTO. And then same thing with Karzy. It's like, I mean, Zven, but are you going to take a chance on Zven after not playing AD carry for like 2 years almost when you have Karzy on your team? Like, no, you're not going to do that. So, I mean, you're kind of just stuck with what you got, and you're going to ride the wave, and hopefully when you're riding that wave, you can get all the way up there. But it's going to be fun to watch them regardless.
And then we have one final series to briefly talk about, and we're going to keep it a little brief just because there was no elimination here. But it was the series that took place on Saturday between G2 and BDS. And that also was an exciting series to watch. I have this marked as, at least for me, one of the most interesting just because of how that played out. To kind of recap, Game 2 was sort of the standalone game where things played out pretty standard across the board in terms of the macro game. And BDS were able to take it, of course, because they were ahead most of the time. G2 almost turned around in the mid game, and then Nuke ended up kind of recognizing the fact that he was behind, using himself more as a zoning tool with that Azir pick, and allowing Isis fed Lucian to free hit and win those fights for BDS. So that game too was very well played from them. They earned that victory. But my focus is going to be on the other three because G2 did something pretty unexpected in bringing back the old lane swap meta, which I had no anticipation this would be coming. Of course, if you're an LPL follower, you're going to know that NIP brought it out at least once, and maybe that's kind of where this inspiration came from for G2. But they brought out a lane swap and fully committed playing at three games of the series. In game one, I think that it was very much a function of recognizing that a Varus Ashe draft for BDS was just going to clap G2's bot lane. So they didn't really want to take that matchup. They rotated their top lane up, used the fact that Sion doesn't really need a whole lot of gold, and used that to their advantage to kind of pull off a victory. But that game was really sloppy. Game three, they bring it back, understanding that, of course, the lane swap worked. Not using a lane swap didn't. So they brought it back and executed so much better in this game. Where, of course, they have Broken Blade on Zac, which is another champion that doesn't need a whole lot of gold. And Adam's Aatrox really does need gold. So, of course, using that to your advantage, kind of Broken Blade was hanging out top lane, not really soaking up any XP or any gold, just used himself to kind of terrorize Adam off the waves. He was level one for a very, very long time, and then even when he came back to lane, he got dove behind the turret and dies, and then he has to come back in again. So, of course, at that point, Adam isn't really in the game. BB can rotate bot, gets himself caught up because he's Zac, and then by the end, he ends up with three solo kills. So, very good for him. Very good for the bot lane as well because they got so many plates. The Yike played for the bot lane and got them plenty of kills as well. And then that just really worked. Game four, they bust out the swap once again. But this time, it felt like BDS was at least a little bit more ready because they saw it already. And they did manage to stabilize that game, where by the time the mid-league game rolled around, the gold was even, BDS even pulled ahead a little bit. But then G2 just does G2 things, turns around to fight, huge turn in the gold, and then they use that to close it out. So just a very interesting way of playing the game. I imagine that teams will be a lot more ready for it now, and if it's brought out, it's not going to be quite as swingy as this series was, but it was fun to watch, and I gotta give them credit for that.
At the very least, now these teams are gonna have to remember how to play the lane swap, because it obviously was a very much meta tactic a few seasons ago. So I'm sure most of these players have had experience with it to some extent, even if they weren't in pro teams. Maybe they were still even experiencing it in solo queue, and that was a thing. But yeah, you're gonna have to be willing to at least like put in a little bit of effort to try and like remember how that stuff was going on back then. And it was fun to see it brought out. I'm not a fan of it as a top laner necessarily, especially when there's no response in solo queue. But you know, in pro play, it's fun because it does kind of have an interesting dynamic of watching it happen around the map. The second game from BDS, as you mentioned, was the one win, and I really enjoyed that from them. I loved at the very end of it, G2 in the first game, I think Caps got a pentakill, or is it a quadra kill or something like that? And they were waiting in the base for it to happen. They were running down the very last person on the complete opposite side of the map, so they waited in the base for the pentakill to come through across the screen, and then they ended the game. I like that BDS in the second game, they ended up waiting for Sheo and LeBrov to get the ace kill for the final kill of that game, and then they hit the Nexus to end it. So I liked the levels of pettiness that were there, very, very strong, and I was really hoping to make it maybe see it go to five, because that's a nice little mental game that they played there. But then it got to game three, and one thing that I don't remember hearing you say or acknowledging your analysis of this was that this was a salty run back, except for one pick of game one. It was the exact same draft, except BB was on the Zac because BDS banned the Scion. But turns out you can just pick another champion that's a tank that has a ton of CC and doesn't really need a lot to be super useful, and you can do the same exact thing again, and it still works. And that was like the huge crux of it to me for the top lane part of the lane swap, is because Broken Blade and Adam are just two completely different players. Adam, I'm sure, would rather die than play Scion or play Zac or play Ornn, anything like that. You know, whereas Broken Blade, he can do it all. Like, I'm sure, like no one loves playing tanks in pro play, but like, if you need to do it, you need to have that willingness to do so. And Broken Blade, I'm sure, is more than willing to be able to pick those champions and have some of those crazy plays that we've seen him make before on the Zac, I remember specifically. So, like, having those two dynamics up there with an Aatrox in both of those games for Adam versus the Scion and the Zac, it's exactly like you said. The amount of resources that tank needs with all the CC and the shield or the healing with the Zac blobs and whatever is just going to be infinitely more valuable in that situation, where if he's getting denied, that Aatrox just absolutely hates his life, because there is nothing that he's going to be able to do until he gets a couple of items. Whereas with Zac, he can just slingshot in and R on top of you. I mentioned it with the play in TH versus Fnatic with Trimby accidentally W-ing Oscar, and he just got a huge 4-man ult. Obviously, that was a lot later in the game, but that's the kind of thing that can happen, right? Even if something stupid happens, if you're a Zac or a Scion, you might just waltz into something that's kind of funny, and it still works out for you. Whereas if you're an Aatrox, you really need to just kind of have that set up. So the drafting obviously was a huge thing. The lane swap was obviously a huge thing. The thing that I'm going to put a little bit of a point of emphasis on to wrap up this series is the end of that game 4. Because in BDS had like a decent positioning in that game. They ended up taking a mid inhibitor, but they lost Adam and Nuke in a team fight after it, as Caps had a nice TP flank behind them in mid lane. Yike got traded, but G2 took the dragon afterwards. Shayo ended up dying trying to steal it. Labrov and Ice get run down by Caps and Mickey. G2 ace them. Then BDS Burger flip the Baron and they lose off of that. But in the build up to that mid inhibitor play, Nuke was looking at Caps bottom, because I believe they had Baron. I believe they were pushing with Baron. But Nuke was looking at Caps bottom, tried to get a trade off of him, but kind of greeted it too much. Obviously, Caps is in his base. It just takes him a few seconds to walk back into the base, get full health, and then that TP flank happens. Whereas Nuke is chunked until he can recall or they can reset and reset. So when that play happens, I put that play solely on Nuke. Because his team is pushing mid and he goes rogue to go bottom and take a trade off of Caps, where like that's just not the thing you need to kind of be doing in that situation. It's one thing if you're gonna like actually go bot and like try to pressure another wave entirely. He looked for the trade, he got chunk for chunk with Caps, and then he backed off because he took a lot of damage in response. So that fight to me was super disappointing, and I think that's the same kind of issue with BDS, is that the decision making just isn't quite there. And yes, they have some good fights, and that obviously is kind of their thing, but the individual decision making, we've seen it with Ice getting caught out numerous times, and we've seen it, you know, with Adam just sometimes having those lapses and those int games with just, you know, his picks and stuff, and sometimes he'll just have those blow ups. But in those instances with Nuke too, Nuke gets caught out a fair share too. I don't think it's quite as egregious, but in that moment specifically, if he just doesn't greed for Caps in those moments up before the TP flank, I think BDS can probably win, because they're pushing mid, like just pressure bot, or at least stay mid with your team, force the advantage with them instead of just going rogue. And now maybe there is still another version of that TP flank fight that still kind of happens, because Caps could still make a play if BDS is pushing mid. But it would just be a bit deeper instead, because BDS wouldn't have been retreating away like they were initially. They were kind of running into Caps at that point. Whereas if that doesn't happen, maybe it is really just like a super deep flank. It still could happen, right? We obviously we'll never know how that would have ended up working. But that was the big thing for me. It was like, I just don't think Nuke really needed to do that. Stay with your team. You're the mid laner. It's not like, you know, it's not like he was playing like Ahri or something in that game, like an assassin. He was playing Azir. Just, you know, siege up with your team, push down mid lane and get what you can there, rotate as a team. That's what you're good at as BDS, is working together and being able to find good fights, find decent angles. No reason to go rogue in that specific instance. So that's me railing in on Nuke there. There was some other stuff that happened too. Like, I think Shao also needed to probably contest the dragon that they lost in that fight too a little bit earlier, because by the time he was going in on it, it was literally already dead. You know, like, at the very least, try to get up a little bit closer to see if he maybe needed to get extra vision a little earlier. But at that point, it was kind of a tough situation already. But losing the two kills, you know, and the dragon is bad, but it's not the end of the world, because Caps ended up getting Isis shut down after that failed contest, as they ended up chasing BDS down afterwards. Ice had a 700 gold shutdown on him that game. Caps gets all of that. You know, if Caps gets all of that, then you're just completely doomed. So I was disappointed with how that series ended, because it seemed like a series I definitely could have and maybe should have went to five, depending on how that stuff mid would have worked out in an alternate universe. But credit to G2. They're obviously still a great team for a reason. They're able to find those angles. TP flanks are always very exciting, and was a great one from Caps to be able to facilitate that one given the circumstances. Props to them. We'll see BDS in the third place match here at the very least, going up against Fnatic.
And that's a good segue. But before we jump into that series, let's set the stage for kind of how things are going to play out with these final two series. With, of course, MSI being on the line, we got to kind of lay the groundwork for what's at stake here. So thanks to how close the standings between Winter and Spring are, it's not really super complicated. We're going to start off with G2, who, of course, won Winter and will be at minimum second in Spring just because of that victory over the first split. If they do end up losing the finals to whoever it is, they will stay in that second seed position. Whoever beats them will be the first seed. That's kind of the less likely outcome, if you will, considering how G2 have been playing. The more likely scenario is that if G2 wins finals, they will lock the first seed at MSI based on the fact that they won the most recent split. And then second seed will be based on championship points, since G2 won both splits. And if that's the case, then we look at where these two teams in BDS and Fnatic are sitting. BDS were third in Winter, they secured 80 points. Fnatic were fourth in Winter, and they secured 60 points. Now, when you do the math, of course, Spring is a little weighed more with this new system this year. They're going to earn 120 for whoever's second, and then 95 for whoever's third. If you do that math, Fnatic will have enough if they overcome BDS. They will overtake them in championship points by exactly 5, thanks to that additional weight, and then they will be able to make themselves over to MSI. If BDS win, then of course they will have higher placement over Fnatic both splits. They'll go to MSI. So the TLDR for all that is that the winner of Fnatic BDS on Saturday will join G2 at MSI. And then the series on Sunday will determine the MSI seeding between those final two teams. We can kind of keep it simple in that sense. But jumping into this very first series that we will see on Saturday between BDS and Fnatic, the lower bracket finals, this, I think, is probably the hardest series to call all split for me. Where, on the one hand, I am more sure than ever that Fnatic's success entirely depends on Razork. We saw Noah pop-offs, but that was a function of him being on Zeri and doing well in the late game. Razork is the guy that gets them there in the first place, and they really relied on that, I felt like, to overcome Vitality, and that reliance is what led to them getting destroyed by G2, where Razork wasn't able to find those angles in the earlier games. On the other hand, I've been hearing from various sources all over the place that Fnatic have been total scrim monsters. They've been beating everybody in scrims. So it could really go either way. Of course, scrims don't always transition into stage games, but you gotta at least acknowledge that it's happening. At the end of the day, what I'm gonna put my faith in terms of predictions, is that this current iteration of BDS, I think, is the best they've been since the surprising runs they had last year in 2023. We're not gonna count G2 because they're fighting still the best, but this is the team that have shown they are the best at team fighting in the LEC otherwise. They've also shown this split that I think is a very big boon to them. that they've at least sometimes been able to execute on alternative strategies. We saw them play side lanes in a couple of games here and there. Of course, in the regular season, that wasn't looking so hot. In playoffs, it looked a lot better. And then, of course, they still are just as good in team fights as they have been. So I think that just the fact alone that they were able to take game two against G2 and then almost took game four at least. They were thrown by the fact that they threw it in the end, but those two performances are a good indicator for me that BDS has kind of leveled up their performances. Fnatic, on the other hand, got 2-0 completely stomped. So just based on that power dynamic, I think that it will be a close series. I still say it's very tough to call, but I will give it to BDS just edging it out 3-2, where the key success that I'm going to stress once again is BDS needs to be able to shut down Razorc early and then look at where Noah's standing in the later game. Don't give this guy Zeri because he's really good at it. His other champions, I think, aren't as good, even if he's still a pretty good AD carry. Ban the Zeri, lock down Razorc, look at Noah late, and then I think BDS can take it.
That was the thing I actually wanted. I forgot about it when we were talking about it with Noah on the Zeri, but the quadra kill that he had was super, super impressive because of all the things you said about it, actually being able to have him go in and be aggressive on it and realize that moment. He had a moment in that game too, at I believe it was at Dragon, where he was dashing in too. Didn't quite have the same impact. I think it was like maybe a one for one in terms of what he did in that specific instance of it, but I was like, oh, okay, wow, Noah actually like saw an angle and dashed in through the wall, and it didn't end up going super great, but I liked seeing it, and then having that happen with the quadra kill at the end was very impressive too. I'm giving it to Fnatic 3-2, basically because of like what the reasons you said BDS need to do to shut down Fnatic is that I think that this is a very tight series. At the very least, at the bare bones minimum, I'm picking Fnatic because I don't want to see G2 beat up on BDS for the millionth time. But I'm going to believe in Razorc to run the jungle. I think that he should be a lot better than Shayo. We can talk about, like the mid jungle dynamic and stuff like that. I know that's been your kind of big crux for Fnatic is Razorc and Humo don't necessarily always work together super well, but I like the individual prowess of both of them.
I think I'm just going to give a little throw in here that this split, at least, or this year in its entirety, I think that that dynamic between the two of them has been looking a lot better. I'm still kind of iffy about it here and there, but yeah, I have to give them the credit, like you said, that the two of them are pairing up. They've had a long enough time playing together. I think that they've been pulling it off.
Okay, good. So I haven't been able to catch all the games, so good to hear you say that they have been improving on that. And that's what I'm going to count on. I'm going to count on Razorc in the jungle, run that up, get Humanoid working together with him in the mid lane. I think those two areas are probably the two biggest gaps in terms of like the individual one versus one comparison is Razorc versus Shayo and Humanoid versus Nuke. Like Oscar and Adams, like it's only close just because I don't think either of them are like super great, even though we were hoping for better out of Adam. And then as for Noah and Jhun and Ice and Labrov, I would probably put like Ice and Noah like somewhat close. I do think Jhun might be a little bit better than Labrov, but again, it's not quite as big as the mid and jungle gap. But I really did like what I saw from Jhun throughout the playoffs, especially in that Vitality series. He didn't end up getting like MVP consideration, I think, but I kind of it was hard to be fair because like everyone in that series kind of had their own moments. That's what I was talking about with Karzu just being like kind of the one person in that series for Vitality. Fnatic had like people trading great games, for like a couple here and there. No one was like super consistent. I gave it to Jhun. I really liked his Blitzcrank. I think it was the Rakan game. I think it was game three. I don't remember exactly who he was playing, but he had a really good another game two in there as well. That was super nice. I think it was Rakan because game four was Renata, and that one was kind of iffy. But I gave it to Jhun in that one. So I think if you can get like a good dynamic of your mid jungle and then have Jhun be able to find those playmaking supports that can roam around and team up with them, that's what I'm going to count on. I really like that three-man group if they can get that enabled. I would much take that over what maybe Shayo and Nuke and Labrov can do. I think the individual talent there is definitely going to be better, and if Razorc and Humanoid have been kind of getting more on the same page, I think that synergy can even really take it up another notch. I'm still, like I said, I still think it's going to be close. I don't think it's going to go as smoothly. We obviously know Fnatic is going to lose at least one game in this series. But at the very least, it should be them picking it up, even if it is close. 3-2 Fnatic for me.
And that's an important deviation, because only one of those teams will be able to go to the finals, and only one of those teams gets to go to MSI. So, very important series, of course. But I don't think that who makes it to the finals matters too much, because when we jump into G2 versus whoever it is, I say BDS, you say Fnatic. Is there a whole lot to talk about here? I don't know, Steve, what are your thoughts?
I mean, you win some, you lose some, you know? I think that I like my BDS versus Fnatic prediction, and then the G2 versus Fnatic one, I mean, Fnatic, they're good. I like Fnatic. I think they're a fun team. I like watching them play. I like Razork and Humanoid and Joe, and Oscar is a little underwhelming. But you know, I like Fnatic. G2 3-1. That's what I got.
Yeah, I'm even gonna say, just because of the fact that I have BDS going up there, I'm gonna give it a just clean 3-0. Where I don't think that G2 are going to bring out the lane swap meta. It's probably not even a meta. They just pulled it off for one series. And I think that pulling it off against BDS was probably the best place they could have done it too. That's kind of an angle I didn't really mention, that BDS are, of course, a relatively fresh set of players. None of these players were pro back when the lane swap meta was originally a thing. So it probably at least somewhat caught them off guard. But yeah, generally speaking, I think that G2 might bring it out once in this series, whoever they're playing against, but they're probably not going to rely on it to carry them through the whole thing. And then just whatever happens, G2 just kind of have that clutch factor. Their early game has been okay. Last year it was good, this year it's sort of faltered. Their mid game, on the other hand, has gotten so much better, of course. And then their late game, it's G2. They're probably going to win the series. I don't see that, even if they give up a game to whoever again it might be that they're up against, it really should be G2 every time. They've been looking even better this split than last split, even better this split than last year. I think that G2 is just the best in EU, no doubt about it.
It would be a 3-1 for me, whether I had Fnatic or BDS in there. I think at least seeing BDS have a good game against G2, and again, as I talked about with that game 4, being in a decent position to be able to close that out, even though they didn't, I'd at least feel comfortable giving them a game. Whereas before, I know I've said I'd want to see them win before I would give BDS any sort of credit in that series. They took a game, had a good chance to make it go to 5, so I'd feel comfortable with a 3-1 either way. But I think, just to be like completely just blunt and just be like straightforward about it, like if you just put Broken Blade on like Rek'Sai or Zac, put Caps on Aurelion Sol, you know, or Hui's a good secondary one, but just put him on A-Sol, it'd just be a 3-0. Like, I mean, it's not like we've seen any team like really beat G2 or A-Sol just in general. Like, has A-Sol lost a game in pro all year? Like, it feels like he has, and he just takes over every single game regardless of who's playing him. So if you give those two guys, those two champions, you can put Yike on whoever, put Hans on, I don't know, put him on like Caitlyn or something. You can just pick whatever you want down there, just pick anything. What does Mickey suck at? Like, put him on, I don't know, what can he int the most on? Pike? I don't know, just pick.
Well,
whatever.
his Nautilus looked good last year, but this year he's been inting quite a bit.
We've seen a couple of bad Nautilus games out of Mickey, so just let him hook every single time, just go in. But as long as you have Broken Blade on Rek'Sai or Zac, Caps on A-Sol, like I said, Hui's good too, he had some really good Hui games, but A-Sol's just whatever, just do that. It's a 3-0. Put him up against JDG, they'll win 3-0 going on those champions, as far as I'm concerned.
That's a little excessive. I think we'll save that conversation for when we're a little closer to MSI, but yeah.
They might know how to play against Aurelion Sol.
Yeah. Either way, it's probably going to be G2 lifting up that shield once again. Hopefully it'll be at least somewhat competitive and they make G2 work for it, but I just don't see any other outcome in the end. And with that, we have come to the end of yet another episode of the Western Focus Podcast, and a big thank you goes out to all of you who have stuck around this long, right up until the end. The LCS, as we mentioned, is finished, so no new games upcoming. The LEC does have two BO5s to go, taking place on Saturday and Sunday respectively, so make sure to tune into those. And also make sure to drop a follow here on Spotify to see our coverage of those two series once they conclude. And then next week, you'll also be able to look forward to our LCS All-Pro list, which we will have ready, cooked, baked for you. We'll have that ready to go. And also, be sure to stick around for our coverage leading up into MSI, which we will have. I'm super excited for talking about the internationals, as always. Special focus on the West, just because we are the Western Focus podcast, but we'll have a little bit of the Eastern team spread in there as well. And if you enjoyed, drop a 5-star rating on this episode. That would go a long way in supporting us, getting the word out to tune in. And finally, drop a follow on Twitter. That's @NoRival_esports for all other related content. We'll see you next week. Be there or be square.